Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Let's go! We got to talk about Michael Van Buren's red shirt situation. There was a report earlier today from 104.5 ESPN regarding that. We'll talk about that coming up. But the very simple stat that explains why LSU is not that good of a football team, it's simple. Ultimately, coaching matters in football. Obviously, LSU is a school that did not have the best offensive scheme. You go from Joe Brady and Steve Ensminger to where we are now with the remnants of the Joe Sloan offense. Now the Tim Rade and Alex Atkins show. So what is this simple stat? Well, there's a thing called Pro Football Focus, and a lot of you are probably familiar with PFF, and not a whole lot of you like PFF. Some of you love PFF. I simply adore PFF because I do think most of what they do is directionally accurate. And what you're looking at on the screen, and I'll explain it for our podcast listeners as well, is a very simple stat called a 60 PFF grade. All right. So if you were to Google what an average PFF grade, what they consider to be a baseline, good, decent starter level player, a guy that is justifiably one that should be on the field. So not a great player by any stretch of the imagination, but just your average football player. You start with a 60 PFF grade. Anything below 60 means you are replaceable. And in the SEC this season, LSU leads the conference in players that have played 200 snaps or more that have a PFF grade of 60 or below. Seven players. Not one, not two, not three, not four. LeBron James style. Seven players have a PFF grade of 60 or below. Now, South Carolina, they have six. Six players of the 14 who have played 200 snaps. LSU has 16 players that have played 200 snaps or more. Then you go down the list. Mississippi State has six. Auburn has six. What does LSU, South Carolina, Mississippi State, and Auburn all have in common? They are mid at best. And then you go down the list. Oklahoma and Vanderbilt both have four. Vanderbilt has four of 12 players, and all four of those players, by the way, are offensive linemen. We'll get to that in just a second. Georgia only has three of their 17 who have played 200 snaps or more. Texas A&M, three. Florida, three. Texas, two. And then we get down to some of the more elite offenses. Ole Miss and Arkansas, two of the best offenses in the SEC. They only have two. Texas, of course, a decent offense. They have two. Kentucky is the outlier down here. They are the only bad offense with only one 60 or below PFF player. Alabama has one, and two elite offenses, Missouri and Tennessee, have zero players below a 60 PFF grade, minimum 200 snaps. So what does that mean? Well, yes, it is indeed the scheme of LSU that is giving them issues, right? There's no way you can think that Arkansas, Vanderbilt, and all those schools have better players than you do, because it's probably not true. There's probably not a gap, But there's no reason for Vanderbilt to have four and Arkansas have two and you have seven. But if you look at last year, and we did a deep dive on this, LSU only had a few that you would consider to be great. I think they only had two that were above 70, and that was Garrett Nussmeier and Aaron Anderson. They have, you see the trivia question, the poll question, I'll give it to you here in just a second. I want you listening to this to come up with an answer. How many LSU offensive players on this team do you think have a PFF grade of 80 or higher? 80 is a very, very, very good player. All right. 90, you are elite. You are beyond elite. And then, of course, 95, that's Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, Joe Burrow territory. Okay. So, simply put, LSU just doesn't have great players. And at this juncture, it's okay to admit that. They have some very good ones. Some of these players haven't been developed properly. That's part of it as well. Another thing is LSU has had some diabolically bad players as well. We go to your spoiled at the top. Why do we keep throwing the ball to Bauer Sharp? I don't know. I thought the second Bauer Sharp completion after the fumble was actually a really good play call that we couldn't block because, well, Weston Davis blew a block, which leads into our next question, our next point here. LSU has two players below a 40 PFF grade. Below 40. All right, so not even close to a below average player. As in, you could probably go get a guy potentially off Southeastern, and they would do a better job than what these two players are doing right now. And just for reference, you guys know how much I piled on DJ Chester last year because he was not great. He had a 49 PFF grade. Paul Mbinga had a 47 PFF grade. They were the lowest LSU starters ever in the PFF era. So far, Weston Davis has a 37 PFF grade. 37. And Bauer Sharp is a few points higher in the 40s. So it's not just that LSU has below average players. It's that they have some bad ones. Some ones that are so bad that it took forever for us to replace them. I don't know if Bauer Sharp's going to be replaced. Weston Davis should be replaced by Ori Williams just to see what we have there. Okay. And Ori's PFF grades aren't that great either, but let's just see what we have. Now, here's a problem with that. And I couldn't go back and lower the threshold here because I had already started doing the 200 snap threshold. It takes a while to do the counting here. There's a problem with the 200 snap threshold. A huge problem is that not everybody plays the same amount of plays. So far, Missouri and LSU have played the same amount of games. 9. Missouri has run 100 more snaps than us offensively. Let me repeat. Missouri has run 100 more snaps than us. What does that mean? We have a lot of three and outs. We're not that great. And that's with the good defense that we have. 100 more snaps. So, per PFF, and the data is a little bit different from site to site because some teams count, or some sites count special teams and garbage time and all that. So, PFF says that LSU has played 600 snaps this year in total, offensively. Okay? 600 snaps. Now, that's not a whole lot. We just explained the difference between them and Missouri. What if we lower the threshold from 200 to 150? Players who have played 150 snaps on LSU's team. I think this is justifiable from a data standpoint because 200 of 600 snaps means that a player has played one out of every three potential snaps that are available. If we lower it to 150, that means a player has played one out of every four snaps available. So I think it's justifiable, even though 150 is not the largest sample size. I think one out of every four is fair. It gets even worse. All right. So out of the 19 players, all right, remember I showed you 7 of 16. If we add three more players to the list who have played 150 or more snaps, we then have three more guys that are below 60 PFF grade. So it goes from 7 out of 16 to 10 out of 19 players. So more than half of the LSU offensive players that have played this season for the Tigers on offense have been below average. So LSU is slightly above average at playing below average players. And slightly above average, well, 50%, that actually is a pretty high number. 52% of the players. And that does not include Garrett Nussmeier, which, by the way, PFF grades quarterbacks too highly. They grade quarterbacks way too favorably. I don't think Garrett, to me, has been a below 60 player because PFF does more play-to-play type of grading. But a PFF does not truly justify some of Garrett's struggles because his mistakes are so big. They're so diabolically big. Game-changing, if you will. So, however you slice it, you have 10 out of 19 guys without Garrett. So that then lends itself to the Garrett conversation. You have to defend him to a certain degree when 10 out of the 18 other guys that are around you are below average players. Now, could Garrett have risen the level of their play to a certain degree? Sure, yeah. The play calling's not on him. The player development's not on him. There's a lot where you can defend Garrett regarding this. And then at the same time, you can also blame him for some of this, right? So it's amazing when I slightly give a minor defense of Garrett Nussmeier, just a minor one, people go nuts. People go nuts. Now we get into the Michael Van Buren conversation. Then we're going to get to all your super chats and all your comments, and I'm going to grant every single wish that you may desire. And by the way, I don't know where I'm staying yet, but I do have tickets to go to the LSU Arkansas game, and I kind of want to give some away. People have sent me all kinds of tickets. I want to give two tickets away. I want to give two tickets away to the game. We'll do it tomorrow night. We'll figure out something, okay? All right. Once again, 904 Drew, you'll defend Garrett by any means. It's okay to criticize a guy while also defending him. Okay? I don't think it is unfair to point out that one of the worst offensive tackles to ever play in the SEC. And by the way, it's the same thing I'll say about Weston Davis that I said last year about DJ Chester. It is not their fault they are continuing to play. It is not their fault. That is on the coaches. All right, so when I point out a player is not playing bad, it's for the sake of the conversation. It is not anything personal. It's on the team. It's on the coaches. It's okay to point out, though, that what we have surrounded Garrett with has not been the best, while he himself has regressed terribly. It's okay to admit that. It's okay. It's not me changing my stance on how Garrett has played. All right. But you ask yourself that question. Now, we get to the Michael Van Buren conversation. So there was a piece by 104.5 ESPN today. LouisianaSports.net, we are fans of them, and Hunt Palmer wrote a column, and it basically you know, was mostly Frank Wilson comments regarding the redshirt situation. And maybe it's something I haven't seen yet. Maybe it's already been discussed. But the piece didn't actually include comments from Michael Van Buren. He's not been made available to the media. And number one, Van Buren's put in a tough spot. This is a really, really, really difficult spot for him to be in. An impossible one. Because if you were not an LSU fan and you were just objectively looking at the young man's situation, you would say, bro, it's just two games. Sit him out. Especially considering you will have a situation where Garrett more than likely is not going to play the bowl game anyway. So you'll still have two starts in theory. You just got to get through these two games. And MVB would justifiably be okay with LSU not playing him and him deciding to not play and make himself available. And once again, I don't mean to toot my own horn, but there are things in life that I get correct. And what did I say going into the Southeastern game? It was a Thursday night live stream. You can go back and listen to it yourself. I said Michael Van Buren should not play versus Southeastern. And ironically, it was Doug Nussmeier who taught me this lesson. All right. And look, someone close to Doug is a huge fan of the channel. And I give Doug a lot of credit. He chewed Ed Orgeron out over playing Garrett Nussmeier in mop-up duty. If you're trying to get into the redshirt preservation thing, why are you playing a player in mop-up duty? It should have been Colin Hurley, who already has redshirted. So that would have given us an extra game to work with here with Michael Van Buren, and that would make this situation a lot easier. Same thing versus Texas A&M. But here we are. Now, you then get into what are the pros of Michael Van Buren not redshirting? Well, number one, there could be some extra compensation given to him saying, look, we want to win these games. The other guy's not doing well. The team wants you to be the guy. Here's an extra $500K to play these final few games. Doubt that happens. There also could be some stipulations where if he does redshirt or doesn't redshirt, that was already built into his contract, if you will, that he gets a bonus that was pre-negotiated. Maybe there's something there. I don't know. But I'm just asking you, if it does come down to this, you must give this young man grace and not call him selfish. If he is a decent starter by year five, which he should be, this is only year two of his career, he probably won't be a big-time NFL draft prospect. If a decent P4 year five starter, he's probably getting $1 million a couple years from now. If he's a decent P4 level starter, and he's no less, unless he just falls off the face of the earth, getting $300,000 extra by having an extra year of eligibility. So we can get into what can the NCAA do about this? Well, you could change the rules where everybody gets five seasons or everybody only gets four seasons. You could just do whatever. Okay. So I don't know. I hate it because if he does do this the way most people would do in this spot with an interim coach who's not going to be the full-time guy more than likely, and a new regime coming in that will probably want their own quarterback, most people would probably tell him to sit out these two games. And I would be honest, I don't know if the locker room would hate him for it. I spoke to a player today that said, hey, I understand. And here's something else that you have to keep in mind as far as players playing for other schools or transferring to other schools, you would be shocked how many of these guys still show love to another guy going to a different school and putting up big numbers. Do you think Xavier Debo Atkins burned every bridge with every single player when he left here to go to Auburn? No, it's the opposite. People are happy for his success over there. So whatever MVB decides to do, but per 104.5, MVB is available. But until I actually hear from him, because it is such a sensitive situation, I just don't know. I just don't know. But I would get it. I would totally get it. Now, what about Garrett? Should Garrett start versus Arkansas? Well, you can make a case his best game of his career was Arkansas last year. He started off fast, played quick, threw some dimes that were dropped, was amazing on third down, threw a few interceptable balls where he got a little lucky. But I attended that game, and I was, you know, having a good time, had a few Diet Pepsis in the stands. And man, he was quick with his reads. Caden Durham was the hottest thing imaginable. And we went in there and won the game. Now, the only area where we were really sloppy were the penalties. We had a ridiculous amount of penalties in that game. But we dominated basically for the majority of that game. We forced some turnovers, and we pulled away in the third quarter. And a lot of that was some good play from Garrett Nussmeier. So it could be the Garrett show on Saturday. And it wouldn't shock me if it was. Okay? Let's go to Conal Cadmium. Just let MVP play the rest of the games. Okay? Let's go to JV with the Modern Family. Unless you are the guy from Modern Family and you're watching. Underachievers galore. Yeah. Let's go to the super chat from Brian. Sup, bro? Who would you pick for offensive line coach and wide receiver coach? Well, you know, I would go get Coach Flood from Texas. But the truth is, it really doesn't matter. You know, the head coach is going to bring in their own guys. So there you go. But there are some good ones out there that would do a better job than what we've had over the past couple of years. And I don't think Cortez Hankton himself has just been atrocious per se, but there's quite a few things I would have done differently. Let's go to Boris. Any head coach candidate that is scared off of a job because of a politician is probably too erectile dysfunctional for the job. A winner is fearless. I didn't think we were going to get into blue pill conversations tonight. Erectile dysfunctional. I mean, what, most football coaches are in their 40s, 50s, 60s? What if we were going after one that has some issues down there and they read Boris's super chat and said, well, you know what? I do need the V's to get the blood flowing and for me to dish the lumber to my wife. And Boris is over here shaming me for it. Men, if you are suffering from ED, just know I have your back. I'm here for you during this troubling time. It'll hit you too. I don't have a problem with it yet, but it will hit me like a ton of bricks. But yeah, I never thought I would say those words on here unless Blue Chew. DMs are open. I want to help out the ladies and Gentiles of PHL. But to finish up here with Boris, I don't think a head coach candidate is worried about a politician and in this case I'm thinking you're talking about Governor Landry. I don't think they're worried about a politician. I think they're worried about meddling. And I would be too. You know, if there was just the faint smell of potential meddling, it would probably scare me off just a little bit. I understand it. Let's go to Andy. Well, LSU has already lost one. It was an edge rusher from Florida. And, yeah, you know, it sucks. You hate losing any recruits. But the truth is, you are in a spot, though, where the new coach can come in and probably be behind the eight ball. So you want to get as many signatures as you can. You know, for the most part, when it comes to transfer portals and decommitments and all of that, LSU has actually done a really good job of keeping guys around. I do think, though, and I don't want people to run away with this because it's going to come off harsh. There were a few guys that remained loyal to the program, and they ate up roster spots and snaps and never really turned into anything. For the most part, through the first 2 or 3 years of when you are a player, that is who you are as a player. True freshman snaps can be somewhat directionally accurate. Normally, if you are a good player, there is something that you have done as a true freshman that makes you go, wow. And here's a good example of that. Jarvis Landry, right? He did not play a whole lot on the 2011 team as a true freshman, but he had, you know, a top five extraordinary wow play from that season when he ended an Auburn kickoff return guy's life. We all remember that play. We could still hear the play. That was a special display of athleticism and just downright, I'm a dog. Because how many times have you seen a wide receiver on kickoff team do something like that? It just does not happen. It was special. So, you know, when it comes to true freshman evaluation, did you do something? Just one or maybe a few plays. But you can't ever get too carried away with true freshman evaluations with what you did in your first year. But by year two, you normally see something. You normally know something, unless a guy is truly blocked from getting on the field. And by that, it's, you know, let's say a guy like Jeray Jenkins. You know, he was brave enough to be in the same recruiting class as Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson, and there were still D. Anderson, Stephon Sullivan, all those guys ahead of him. Thaddeus Moss, a tight end. Where was he going to get snaps? So that was a later year three breakout. But those are rare. It is really, really, really rare. And Jeray Jenkins actually did have a few mop-up duty plays. So, you know, there were some guys that hung around, had some moments of excellence, and still ended up not doing anything. Okay? You saying I stink, man? No, you don't stink. Jamie, what's good? Jamie's always showing the most love. But Andy, I don't know how many recruits LSU loses. Let's go to Pegasus. I actually hope Weston Davis sticks it out. There's plenty of examples of young players, especially at offensive tackle, struggling, and then it clicks. Maybe a new offensive line coach could make it work. All right. Tari, what's good, man? Coming up after this, I want to talk about the Weston Davis thing. I will defend the LSU offensive line struggles to a certain degree, and it is
play call.
PHL Nation, it's time to lock in and get serious really quickly with our friends at Fortified Gulf Coast and FortifiedGulf.com. This is my buddy, Ramey. He is one of many Fortified Gulf Coast inspection professionals that are doing something to help you not only save your home, but your memories.
The Fortified program got started about 13 years ago. We adopted it here in New Orleans about 2.5 years ago. It's a more advanced way of doing the roof. It adds an extra layer of protection, whereas even if a hurricane was to pull the shingles off this roof, water will still not get into the house.
So yes, your establishment is important, but what about the things you can't replace? That family scrapbook or that painting that's been handed down from Meemaw to Papaw and to you? It is important to protect that today with Fortified Roofing. And while this seems like a priceless asset, did you know it can actually save you on your homeowner's insurance up to 37% if you are in South Louisiana? Just call the number 504-444-7563. That's 504-444-7563, or visit fortifiedgulf.com. That's FortifiedGulf.com. Let's go. Power Hour Network listeners and viewers, you might be consuming this content with that crick in your back that you've been trying to get rid of for so long. Take this as your sign today to book your appointment with LabordTherapy.com. In the Lafayette region, there is no one that you will find that cares more about any different type of pain that you might have than the team at LabordTherapy.com. Book today. Once again, that's LabordTherapy.com, or you can visit one of their 5 locations all throughout the Lafayette region. All righty. So I want to show you a very simple breakdown that we did. We hope you enjoy it. It's up on Patreon. Released a little snippet of it on Twitter. And basically, the breakdown was about a play. And I did it. I actually found a big screen TV. And basically, this is the play, okay? So what I like about... Let me turn this down. What I like about this play that you're watching, it's one that everybody runs, and we've not really run it. We run a variation of the play, but we don't run this one, and it's called RB Fast. And basically, what I think LSU could have done a better job of is calling plays where you don't need your offensive lineman to execute a single block, okay? So the design of this play is to get this defense flowing in one direction and us go in the different direction, okay? So the entire offensive line is being used as a decoy, and we fake that jet sweep motion, and you see the success of this play. Weston Davis doesn't need to execute a single block. Kerryus Kern, none of them do. They just have to go with the play, be distractions, don't just totally blow your assignment, and then get out and roll out to the right side. And look at all this space we created. Instead, what we did a lot of during the Sloan era was outside zone left, outside zone right, where every single one of our guys needed to execute common but still difficult blocks for us to succeed. So for me, you've got to call more plays where you have that, right? You have a higher likelihood of plays being successful just based on the design of it. And there you go. So now Garrett has the option. He could throw it to Nick, boom, or he could throw it to Caden, or he can run it himself. We know he's not doing that. And then here's Alabama running this play, obviously a different variation of it. And on this one, we hit the over. And since this was fourth and short, or third and short, Alabama just hits it to the running back in the flats. We hit the over right there to Nick, which would have been Horton right there. And why not? Let's show the Buffalo Bills running this play. If you want to see this full breakdown, patreon.com/LSU football, or you could join the membership. You see the cool insignia next to the names of legendary CEO. And we'll show you the Georgia one. Why not? And so the Georgia one is the most like the one that you just saw, because you see, we actually do our Georgia in this situation. They actually do hit the over. Okay. Because they both, in this instance, are guarding the running back. And then you could see he's throwing this ball to Noah Thomas, who himself, like Nick, was a transfer. And there you go. So, you know, if I were Sloan, I would have done more plays like that where your offensive line doesn't get a bad grade. You know, they don't get a negative grade for that. They don't necessarily, I don't think, get a positive grade because they didn't have to really do anything. But they also don't get a negative grade. It's a good way to... It's a good way to misdirect and do different calls. Okay? Mike says... Weston Davis do an immature Lance Hurd portal transfer and flee the scene like an infant who needs, I don't know. I don't know what Weston's going to do. I still love him, though. As much as I've criticized Weston Davis, I'm always going to show him love because he is a man in the arena, right? Yeah, he's getting paid. Yeah, he should play better. But he's out there fighting his tail off in the toughest conference in America. And it's not his fault that he hasn't been benched. Okay. Alexander says, I think Solomon Thomas will be good too. He has been battling injuries. All right, sissy. So, yeah. Now, you guys know. As you move deeper into the rants here, I am a big believer in personal fitness. I myself struggle with it, right? I'm a chubby individual. I have been on an Oreo kick. I just can't quit eating them. I ate a full container of them in a 24-hour period. So today I worked out legs, got a little shoulders in, and did a 6-mile run earlier today. Now, you don't have to do all that. But, y'all, your health is wealth. Okay, I'm getting old. I had to spray some WD-40 on these knees to get going. Okay? What's up, Steve? Ah, Steve, what's good, bro? Haven't seen you in a minute. Ron John, we're all a little chubby. Yeah, that's true. But go out there, do the damn thing. Eat right. Just do a simple walk. If you want me to walk with you, I'll travel to where you are right now and go on a walk with you. Okay. Next thing. It is a battle for the Golden Boot. A lot of you know my connection to the state of Arkansas. I played high school football in Arkansas. You know, Baton Rouge is home. I would prefer to be in Baton Rouge. My wife, who is from Arkansas, loves Baton Rouge. She would prefer to be in Baton Rouge as well. But this rivalry means a lot to me. It's personal, right? You know, I think this game remaining a permanent game for us is huge because we're going to be going through a transition with our next coach. I do think it's going to be a real transition year because of how these portal windows will set up. And I do think, for me, even if it is a slight down year or whatever, we got to win this trophy game. I mean, we cannot lose to Arkansas. Okay? We just cannot do it. I'm in an Arkansas group chat with some high school buddies, and I'm like one of two LSU fans there. and I hate their guts this week. Absolutely despise them. I don't care what anyone says about the rivalry. It's one-sided. Arkansas cares about us and then LSU and whatever. The truth is, though, I love this game. It's a trophy game. They've always played us tough. So let's go out there and get the daggum job done. Now, here's the scary thing about Arkansas is they could be a Texas Tech if they want to. They've got money. They just need to find a guy that they are willing to pay for. So there you go. Let's go to Big Dex. We can have dialogue about the offensive line players, but I haven't seen any development of the offensive line. Am I getting an alert? I don't know what's happening. I think the Facebook stream went down. So my apologies. Once again, if one of the streams ever goes down, I know I'm mostly a YouTube guy, just go to the Facebook or the Twitter stream. I'm always live on those three. Okay. But I haven't seen any development of the offensive line since they won the Joe Moore Award with Joey B with a different offensive line coach. Brad Davis got to take five stars and produce some decent product. It's mostly true that Brad Davis has not done a good job coaching this offensive line. It's mostly true. All right. Once again, recruiting is so big when it comes to this position, and he's done a really, really, really good job of doing that very thing. It's just when you have produced three of the four lowest PFF graded players at three different positions, it's probably you, okay? Let's go to Alexander. What is most likely to happen? LSU hasn't scored over 25 against an FBS opponent, and Arkansas hasn't held FBS opponents under 30 points. What is the most likely thing to happen? Well, I do think if you were to look at the two locker rooms, I know a lot of people have said, well, Carter, Arkansas, they're looking at this game. This is their Super Bowl. Well, it might be. I mean, they still have Texas the next week. I could see a world, though, where this Arkansas locker room is completely cooked. Not everybody loves him some Bobby Petrino over there. Frank Wilson's a little bit different. You know, I think the guys would say, hey, it's Alabama. We didn't play terribly versus Alabama. And you have the new angle of a potential quarterback change, especially if MVB makes himself available. That might, you know, rejuvenate the team. So I do think Arkansas will be, or excuse me, LSU will be the more motivated team. Especially this being the last SEC home game. Let's go to Legendary CEO. LSU maxes at 34 points. I think the defense struggles against the run and loses 45-34. Did anyone see Austin Deculus? He's still out there doing his thing. But he is the lowest graded PFF offensive tackle. I don't care. He has stayed in the NFL longer than anybody would have expected. Okay. Let's see. What else? There was something else I wanted to get to LSU related. Oh, head coaching situation. So Louisville is trying to get the Jeff Brohm extension done. I don't know a whole lot about Jeff Brohm. Okay. I don't watch a lot of ACC football. Obviously, you know, I watched a decent amount, you know, for the Tyler Shuck film studies I did for the NFL channel. And Brohm's a good coach. I mean, he's been basically good everywhere he's been. And, you know, I saw someone on Twitter named Rosin Will point out, and he's a very sharp guy, he said that Jeff Brohm's fourth down decision-making is not the absolute best. It's not. And, you know, it's a big thing for me. But he is an organized program runner. Will he come in here and stay focused, unlike Brian Kelly? Give it his all for LSU? I would hope so. So, you know, with this extension coming, I just don't see him leaving Louisville. It seems like he has a really good thing going there. Okay. Now, the next thing that I feel is important. It seems as if YouTube TV is reaching an agreement with ESPN before this next weekend's games. It's going to be one of those things where people remember this fight, but eventually they'll forget it. It's just typical negotiations. And it happened during the regular season. Now, if this happened in the postseason, I think it would be different. All right. But I do think we'll come to a resolution. Now, I wanted to save this for the end. Got into a little Twitter beef today because Eli Drinkowitz said a quote about the college football playoff that he hates the way the sport is being discussed right now about the playoff. That everything about college football is about the playoff. And guess what? Inject that into my veins. Not everything in this wacky, beautiful sport of college football should be about the damn playoffs. There's over 100 teams and only 12 make it. Now, at the same time, you should be disappointed if LSU does not make the playoffs. We have not made it in four seasons under Brian Kelly. It's a miracle we didn't make it in 2023, and it's probably even more of a miracle that we're not even in the discussion here in 2025, okay? So what does that mean exactly? Well, there are plenty out there that are hot taking this up, saying, hey, we shouldn't go get Eli Drinkowitz for saying this, especially since Virg Ausberry said that LSU should be in the playoff every single season. I have no problem with Eli Drinkowitz saying that. Because this sport is not just about the playoffs. In fact, the idea of playoffs are stupid. The only sport where it even makes any type of sense is football. But we are so playoff obsessed in American sports where everything matters. Everything. Everything matters. The only thing that matters is the playoffs. Nobody gives a rip about the regular season where the games are actually held mostly on campus, where hundreds of thousands gather. But if your only discussion point is the playoff, then guess what? What's the point of of getting excited about Ohio State and Michigan? There is no reason to be excited about that. If everything is just about the playoff, what about all these other crazy rivalries that have teams playing in it that have neither coming close to the playoff? It's stupid. It is simply stupid for everything to be about the playoff race, especially when things change so much. It's part of why I don't do for the SEC channel a college football playoff release show, because there's so many theoreticals that get dated immediately. Okay. Here's Pegasus, who I love. I adore. You guys know Pegasus is one that pushes me to be the best I possibly can be at doing this thing. And I feel like I'm the one of the best doing this in all of college football. He says, not my kind of coach. When you coach at LSU, it is all about the playoffs. Really? It's all about the playoffs? So 2010 LSU doesn't mean anything to you? 11-2 with the Cotton Bowl victory? That doesn't mean anything to you? 2016? Beating Lamar Jackson in that bowl game? That doesn't mean anything to you? It's a sad way to live. It's a sad way to live. Shouldn't live like that. But Carter, we're LSU. Really? Playoffs are the standard. Really? We're very fortunate to have won 3 national championships, been to 4, and done some really great things. But we got to look at ourselves in the mirror. We have been mostly Music City Bowl, Pop-Tart Bowl level team. We've mostly been 8-4, 9-3. All right, so if you want to be in this player for bust mentality every year, I am of the belief that in a 12-team playoff format, LSU should make it once out of every 2 years. Okay? They should make it once out of every 2 seasons. Verge, the athletic director, says we should be in it every year. And that's a great mentality to have. That's a mentality that I would like to have. Yeah, sure. Tell my team every year we're going to the playoff. But you also have to give yourself a rational opinion. At LSU, you should make the playoff once every 2 years. Minimum. Okay? 2 out of every 3 years is probably a little bit more my liking. But everyone said I was soft and I didn't have a rightful opinion on this. I don't care. You can't just be playoff obsessed. It's a bad, bad, bad way to live. Okay? Thank you to Tim for following on Twitter. Also, shout out to Wes Chase. I get a response on this from Leland on one of my film studies. A guy named Leland. Imagine living your life and your name is Leland. Not with a D. Could have given him a D. Leland. And he said, Carter, what's the point in doing your film studies? The season is over. Man, that's the stuff I can't stand. I cannot stand it. The season's not over, Leland. We still got 3 more games, whether you like it or not. Whether you like it or not, I still care. If the season's over, why am I going to the game this weekend? But I mean, do y'all want me to just pack it up and just have a long, barren off season? Here's a weird thing about the people that say the season is over. Okay. Here's the weirdest thing. And look, I don't love Arkansas. I love this rivalry. I'll admit that. But last year, the season was over. I went to LSU Oklahoma. It was the only game I went to. Season was over then. I went to that game. Here's the thing I don't like about the season is over crowd. Okay? It's that all off season, all I was told was, hey, we just got to beat Clemson. We got to go 1-0. And what did I tell you? No. I had LSU as a 9-3 team, shaded closer to the 8-4 than the 10-2 side. And yeah, I'll admit I got a little overexcited about beating Clemson on the road. I thought they were a good team that just had a bad night. Oof, I was wrong. But I had LSU as a 9-3 team, making the playoff as a 9-3 team. And I do think we'll get an SEC team at 9-3 into the field this year. But I had LSU losing versus Clemson. Guess what? Beating Clemson meant nothing. But all offseason, you know, people were just excited talking about the Clemson matchup. And now, when we have actual games to discuss, people just want to talk about head coaching stuff. People just want to tell you, hey, these games don't matter. Well, tell that to Montour Delaney. He could opt out right now and still be a first-round pick. Not change a damn thing for him. Okay? Like Pegasus says, you're only guaranteed 12 of them. Remember, of any major sport that we have, any one of them, think about any sport in the world that people care about. The scarcest resource we have are college football games. NBA, you get 82 of them. College basketball, you get 50 of them. Baseball, you get 60 of them. Major League Baseball, you get 162 of them. College football, you get 12. 12! It's a beautiful thing. Now, big thanks to our Super Chats tonight from Brian and Boris. Don't forget, join our PHL Patreon, Discord, all the good stuff. Let's give out a pair of tickets to the LSU-Arkansas game tomorrow night. It is! Power Hour LSU. Boom! Tonight, we are doing chicken. Let's go. Let's go.